the first step was just going on the show, where there is a hierarchy of entertainment in people's minds that, you know, people understand that there's a trajectory for actors, that maybe you start on soaps and hope that you graduate to primetime television or film, and that those forms of entertainment are somehow, you know, superior.
It is 9 past the hour. I'm Larry Flick, and it is The Jolt on Sirius XM LQ 108. And what a treat to welcome James Franco to our studio. Why are you laughing?
I don't know.
Are you rarely called a treat?
I was touched.
You're a very tasty treat there,
James Franco. Thank you.
It's really, really nice to meet you. I'm a big, big fan. And James can be seen in the new movie, Oz, The Great and Powerful. It feels like a different kind of movie for you. What pulled you into this one? Whenever I think about you, I think about you doing more Earthbound type movies than this.
Yeah, you're right. It is different than probably any movie I've ever done. It's a huge fantasy film, but in other ways, it is familiar. It was directed by Sam Raimi, who I'd worked with 3 times on the Spider-Man trilogy. And it's a comedic, I play a kind of a comedic role. So even though the setting is very different than anything I've ever done, I saw that it was a great opportunity because I could play somebody, you know, play this character for laughs in the context of an epic film. And I found that you know, I just thought that didn't happen every day.
You look like you're having fun.
Yeah.
Some actors just exude a good energy when they're in a good space. And my sense is that as fine a performer as you are, if you're not happy, it all shuts down.
I totally agree. When I was a younger actor, I took it very seriously. And I take acting very seriously now. But I didn't understand what you're talking about, that when people would say, like, you need to love what you do, you need to have fun, I thought, oh, that will just lead to, you know, kind of shallow acting, or it wouldn't have any depth to it. And I thought I had to torture myself.
Mm.
And what I found is that when I was torturing myself, it would maybe, you know, give characters some depth, but it wouldn't... It wasn't as easy for audiences to get to know the characters. I would sort of cut myself off in ways.
Mm.
And now that I have fun, even in my dramatic roles, if I have fun doing it, I find that it's just, I guess the way to say it is, it's just more entertaining.
Well, you can savor the intensity, right? You can savor the darkness that a character travels through, and that gives, I would imagine, as a performer, it gives you a bit of joy. Like when we're doing a very serious topic here, we were doing a very, very raging topic earlier this morning, and on one hand, there was all the intensity of the emotion, but there was also joy in the fact that it was happening and that it was working. And so I would imagine that as an actor, once you learn that it's okay to kind of go, this tastes good to me as an artist, then it just makes the performance better, don't you think?
Yeah, I think this is a very subtle subject, and I think a lot of performers have different opinions about this. I feel like, generally speaking, if you can put a little bit of, now we're talking about humor maybe, but if you can put a little bit of humor, or just what we were talking about earlier, joy, into anything, I think it hints at a additional level of understanding. Humor is a way of looking at a situation and understanding it and then also looking slight, you know, depending on the how humorous it is or how satirical it is, it's saying, okay, I see the situation, and then here's kind of what's absurd about it. And that means that there's an additional level of understanding. So I think that's one of the reasons why humor is so powerful. It's a way to say to the audience, hey, here's a situation, and I'm also sort of commenting on it. Mm. And it's a way to bring them in.
Well, what I love, this is James Franco joining us here on The Jolt. I'm Larry Flick. It's 14 past the hour. What I love about your journey, your trajectory, for lack of a better word right now, is it feels like, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that you have started to relish the idea that as an actor, you can and maybe should be a provocateur, and that there's a lot of button pushing in your performances, whether it's part of the script and part of the directed action, or whether it's just in the eyes and it's not written.
I would say, yes, there are times when I do what you're talking about, and there are times when I don't try to do what you're talking about, and people just, you know,
they read
into it and say, right, that I'm doing something that, right, that I'm not intending. When I do a movie like Oz that is a huge epic fantasy film that's a family film, I don't want to go into a movie like this and wink at the audience. It's not my intention
and
to...
And I don't feel like it's happening here, yeah, but I feel like I've gotten it in the past. I think what I like is there's a purity in this performance that is different than... And again, you know, there's certain things that are appropriate for certain,
exactly,
environments.
I think maybe what you're getting at is I do a lot of different kinds of things. And when you just add those up or add a few of them up and you say, oh, he's coming out in Oz, and then in the same month he's coming out in a movie like Spring Breakers, with directed by Harmony Korine, where I play a rapping drug dealer with cornrows.
Those cornrows are everything, James.
That
I love them.
Yeah, I loved them. I didn't love having them, but I'm glad I did it. They're very itchy. They're very itchy.
I'll bet they are.
But the comment,
were you like the king of tapping? Were you tapping your head like the ladies?
I understood what the tapping was about once, yeah, I had them. And anybody that's had cornrows, you know, it's a little club. You can all talk about the itch.
Exactly.
But if you put those two movies together, then it starts to seem like, oh, what is going on? It's hard to kind of pin down, I think.
Mm, very, very interesting. You know, there's another movie that I wanted to mention to you just because I was reading about it. I can't remember where. Maybe it was in Attitude. The Interior Leather Bar.
Yes.
And I was very, very excited about this movie. And it goes into what excites me about you as an actor. I feel like you care, but you don't care. Do you know what I mean? Like, you care about that. You care about what you do, but you don't care if other people get it. That you're going to count on someone getting it, and that's going to be good enough.
I guess the answer to that is related to what we were just talking about, where there are different areas of my career, and I do a lot of different things. And so, when I'm hired on to do a movie like Oz, I want to do my job. I want to play that role well. I want to collaborate with those filmmakers and just be contained within that world. And that will have a very, you know, this movie will have a very wide release. That's what we're aiming for. We're aiming for, you know, a lot of people to enjoy this film. And so I want to act accordingly and behave accordingly and do my job accordingly. When I do something like Interior Leather Bar, which is my own very, very small project that was made in a certain way for a certain budget, because that would allow us a different kind of freedom. We don't need millions of people to enjoy Interior Leather Bar. It was made to examine very different things. It was made to push boundaries. It was made without an end in mind. It was an exploration. And so that means a lot of things. It means that I'm not going to try and release it wide. It won't get a wide release. I'm going to put it in areas like the Sundance Film Festival, the Berlin Film Festival, where there are audiences that are interested in this kind of material and this kind of film. And the whole point of the film is to raise questions and push boundaries. So if a lot of people don't understand it, that's okay. I don't need to make back a huge investment. It really is supposed to be experimental, and if that's not your thing, it's fine. I don't need everybody to understand.
See, I can't wait to see it because as a veteran of leather bars, I'm curious to I'm curious to see how it plays out on screen. And what I feel like the duality and the dichotomy of these kinds of projects is that it's mining, you know, from a business standpoint, mining one audience while tending to others and making sure that we know that you're there and that you are cognizant of us. And that's something that's really unusual from a, quote, Hollywood actor.
So, wait, which film says that I'm aware?
I think Interior Leather Bar does. I think movies like that. I think, you know, to me, you know, you're here, you know, I'm a gay man and there are many people who view you as a gay icon. I view you as, if I'm being honest with you, I don't even know if I think of you as an actor as much as I think of you as a performance artist.
Oh, thank you.
As someone who just kind of like glides from one project to the next. I mean, I watched you on General Hospital.
Okay.
And thought, this dude is fucking nuts. And I love it. He's fucking twisted. Because watching that, I felt like you were playing like you were like dying to fuck the shit out of Jason the entire time. Even though you turned out to be his brother.
I did watch it.
But you played it like, yeah, Sam, get the fuck out of my way.
Right.
That's why I want you gone.
Well, the General Hospital thing is a whole...
It's a whole other can of worms.
Yeah, that... I'm so happy that I got to do that and that happened. It's not only... I mean, one thing that it is this weird culture clash where the first step was just going on the show where... There is a hierarchy of entertainment in people's minds that, you know, people understand that there's a trajectory for actors that maybe you start on soaps and hope that you graduate to primetime television or film and that those forms of entertainment are somehow, you know, superior. And I had read this book by this guy named Carl Wilson called, I think it's called The Journey to the End of Taste. It's part of this series called 33 and a Third that where writers write about a particular album and musical album. And he was writing about one of Celine Dion's albums. And he was not a Celine Dion fan. But he then started to question himself and say, well, why? Why do I think Elliott Smith is superior to Celine Dion? What is that? Why do, you know, there are millions and millions of people who love Celine Dion. Why do I think my taste is superior? And so it's a whole examination of that and what the criteria is for our judgments, in especially for forms of entertainment. And what he came to is that, well, some people are getting something out of Celine Dion and some people are getting certain things out of Elliott Smith. And who knows? Maybe, you know, whatever emotional thing or whatever it says to, you know, some people about their lives, that's what Celine is giving them. And he's getting maybe something similar about from Elliott Smith. And so I thought, you know what? I think there are probably things that soap operas can do that film can't do. And who am I to say that, you know, I'm better? Well, I'm just going to put myself in that situation.
Well, it's all... I read that book because I love the 33 and the 3rd series. Yeah. I have like about 5 of them in my desk upstairs. Yeah. And what I got out of that book is that it's all valid, that sometimes you have to pull your head out of your ass and realize that it's not possible for everyone to respond to everything the same way, nor should you, because how boring is that?
Right.
How dull is that? And how completely arrogant is that?
Right.
So I have been, like I said, I've been enjoying the journey you've been traveling, and I've actually been enjoying also how it messes with people, because folks will wonder, well, why is he doing General Hospital? And then here's this great movie Oz, and you know, this is speaking in one way, and then we have this, you know, these other movies, and it was like, who is James Franco? And my other take is that you enjoy the intrigue that other people indulge in, because why settle the bets? Let them keep talking.
There are a lot of reasons for, you know, my approach. First of all, I'm just interested in a lot of things. I've gone back to school for a lot of things. I've gone back for film. I've gone back for literature. I've gone back for art. And in the contemporary art world, there's a better understanding of this kind of post-studio practice, of this idea that a subject, you find a subject and then you find the form. That you don't need to just be a painter. You can, if you think something will be better suited to performance or video or music, it's much more accepted for contemporary artists to just flow through all of those forms. Right now, it is less accepted for people in the film industry, at least to you know, try different things, at least certain kinds of things. Now, it's a little more accepted that you know, an actor now can become a director. You know, people like Ben Affleck, you know, is, you know, doing great things and transitioned so well. You know, obviously people like Clint Eastwood and I don't know, Kevin Costner, but when an actor, you know, decides to write a book or go into the art world or something like that, there's an immediate skepticism. And I understand that, because people in the film industry are generally, you know, in a bigger kind of spotlight. And so there's this knee-jerk reaction that they're, you know, using their celebrity just for, you know, self-aggrandizement or something like that, or just because they can, and they're getting opportunities that they wouldn't otherwise have, or that Snooki from Jersey Shore is going to write a book, and, you know, it's maybe she didn't even write it, or, you know, and so that's the immediate association, that if I go and write a book, it's on the level of Snooki writing a book or something like that. And I don't, you know, of course, my book was published because of my status in this other realm, where a lot of my classmates in the writing departments at, you know, Brooklyn College or Columbia didn't get their books sold right out of, you know, right when they graduated. But that's not to say that I don't take what I'm doing very seriously. And for me, it's just an exploration of form. And what I do enjoy is going from one, you know, discipline or medium or realm to another, and seeing how, when the significance or my persona in one realm then is kind of brought into another place, what happens? I feel like it generates a lot of energy and a lot of power, and it's sort of my place. As an artist, you need to look at, well, what can I do? What can I bring to the table that nobody else can bring? Mm. And so I saw a lot of artists that I love, like Cindy Sherman, Paul McCarthy, Douglas Gordon, Richard Prince, Nate Lohman, younger guys like Dan Colin, all using film, celebrity as sources. But they are coming at it from the outside. Here I am. I'm in the middle of Hollywood. But I've also, you know, gone to art school and make art. Well, I can also use celebrity and film and acting and performance and all of these things. But I've got 1 foot on the inside, and I can take 1 foot out and put it on the outside. And that's a fairly unique position.
And that's a really, really great thing. And it's I love how you use it. James Franco, thank you for making time to join us today. It's really been nice talking with you. The movie, go see it. It's called Oz, the Great and Powerful. I hope we can continue this chat sometime.
All right, I hope so.
Looking forward to it. Stick around. Sandra Bernhardt's up next.